So welcome, everyone, to the Conscious Business Telesummit. This is Adela Rubio, your host with ConsciousBusinessTelesummit.com. And today's call is call number 7 in our series, The Heart of Authentic Business, with Ellen Britt of Marketing Chi. So let's take a moment just to bring our attention and awareness to this hour that we're going to be spending together. So take a nice deep breath. If you've been sitting all day, just stand. Feet hip-width apart, soften the knees. Take a nice deep breath. And exhale. And on that exhale, just feel yourself relaxing, shoulders really dropping down. And just your breath slowing down. And as you slow down, your breath gets fuller and deeper. And there's more spaciousness inside, which relaxes and releases you into this moment, open, aware, and intent on this topic of the heart of authentic business. So feel yourself and feel all of those who are up for this game of conscious business and authentic business and being from the heart. And just feel how much of a movement there is, an awakening all around the world. People are getting it. They're knowing it. And you know it. You get it. That's why you're here. So there's something for you on the adventure of today's call with Ellen and Adela. And so just know that it's here already. And you may want to have a pad and a piece of and a pen or a pencil nearby just in case you want to jot anything that just popped out for you that you're ready to play with after the call. So thank you, everyone, for being here and being part of this movement of conscious business and awakening of business in the planet in a new way. And being here for this topic, the heart of authentic business, our guest today is my dear mentor and friend, Ellen Britt, the co-founder of Marketing Chi, which helps heart-centered entrepreneurs add powerful internet marketing strategies to their businesses. Ellen specializes in mentoring her clients to build large email lists through virtual joint venture events and then guides them to combine the results with a custom, highly leveraged business model designed to produce immediate cash flow and continued profits. Drawing on her 22 years' experience in emergency and occupational medicine, Ellen has honed her interviewing skills to a fine edge and has had the opportunity to interview many of the most well-known names in internet marketing, as well as in self-development. She's facilitated over thousands of hours of teleclasses and is an expert at selling her high-ticket programs via preview teleseminars and in one-on-one phone conversations. In addition to her 2 decades of experience as a physician's assistant, Ellen also holds a master's in psychology and a doctorate in biology. She's professionally trained in hypnosis and guided imagery, and she uses these skills extensively with her high-end clients to help them achieve breakthrough business results. Another Atlanta being is Ellen. Welcome.
Yeah, hot Atlanta, I heard somebody say out there. It's not so hot today here, though.
Well, it's not hot, but it is certainly hot. There's loads of folks on this telesummit that are from Atlanta, so there's something in the water there, Ellen.
Well, Atlanta has always been a great city for business, and in particular, internet marketing. So I'm really fortunate to live so close because I get to take advantage of so many conferences that are right up the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's exciting to be like in the nexus of it all, you know, with everything going on around you. Yeah. So, I've got a feeling that some of the folks on this call have heard of a heart-oriented business, a soul-centered business, and I know that what's cool about you, not only there's so many cool things about you, but what you bring to the table is this deep experience of the body, and and then you've got this amazing depth of knowledge when it comes to business and marketing and message. So I'm really excited to see what's gonna happen on this call today.
I'm pretty curious myself, Adela. It's not scripted, that's for sure.
Well, it's never. I think people already know that nothing on these calls is ever scripted.
No, well, that's what makes it so fun.
Yeah, because we don't work like that.
I know I'm in safe hands, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But so I wanted to start off because, you know, this isn't written anywhere because this is all in your experience. And I know this because I work with you. So what is it? What is an authentic business to you, Ellen?
Well, you know, I've been hearing this phrase, heart-centered, being spoken of more and more and more. And I heard a couple of your folks come on, you know, introducing themselves. And the one woman, I'm sorry, I can't remember her name, who spoke quite eloquently, I thought, about the remark that you had made, Adela, about the business. What was it that she said? You have to, the business has to come from deep inside you,
mm-hmm.
right? So I think, you know, a few years ago, for a lot of folks, and I don't want to slight men in any way, but and because a lot of women are like this too, but a particular kind of male-oriented business viewpoint was to just see what would make money and go out and do it no matter what it was. I mean, you know, most people were ethical about it, but I'm saying it didn't matter. If it was a good niche and it was a good market, they would just do it, regardless of whether they were passionate about it, regardless of whether they really felt called to do it, regardless if they felt that would help them to live their purpose in the world, they would just do it. And women in particular, and many men, are getting really tired of that. And they are gravitating toward businesses that really speak to who they are, really within their deepest self. And of course, in the Western culture and really globally, that deepest self we often speak of as our heart, don't we? So, you know, this is what I think of as a heart-centered business.
Yeah. And if it doesn't come from this place, those things that we do, we were speaking about it as we were starting the call, I think that that's one of the problems that people have. It's almost like they put the cart before the horse because you're taught, okay, you're in business, and now you need a business plan, and then you need a marketing plan, and then you have to have the website. And so it's all the mechanics of a business, but without the substance.
Right. And without that, you know, without that substance, and where, because all those things are necessary, but they flow from a foundation. So if you don't have that foundation, that inner foundation, that heart-centered foundation, many people will go ahead and start successful businesses, but then they get burned out. Or I have clients that come to me all the time. They say, you know, I have a successful business or had a successful business, but it's just not me. It's not what I'm called to do, and I don't want to do it anymore. Lots of people are saying that now.
Yeah, and you're pointing to another thing that I've been hearing a lot during this series. And what's cool about these series, they're so intense, because what happens is it's not only the interviews that are going on, but then I'm having conversations with people and emailing outside of the interview times.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I've kept hearing over and over and over again, and this is from colleagues, it's not even a lot of participants. These are colleagues who have businesses, who have lists, you know, who are out there mm-hmm. and have a presence. And this is one of the things that's been coming up, is that the desire for the business doesn't flow. I mean, money is important. We all need money, of course, and we all want to be successful and prosperous. But that's not the main driving factor.
No, money is never the main driving factor. You know, people think it is, but, you know, there's some really interesting studies. There's a new book out. I was going around browsing in my famous home away from home, Barnes & Noble, and looked at the new, of course, I always gravitate toward the new business books. There's a new book out called Priceless, and I can't remember the author, sorry, but it's brand new. Unfortunately, it's not available on the Kindle, so I keep pounding the publisher to see if they will put it for the Kindle. But I skimmed it, and it looks fabulous. But he's talking about this idea of pricing really being very relative, and it's not the first thing that people think of when they look at the value that they're going to get from something. So I don't. Hopefully, I didn't go off on a tangent there, but that just popped into my head that's kind of coming to the fore, is that money is not the main issue. Now, you don't want to go down that road too far, because sometimes I've found, Adela, that people who are very heart-centered, who are very spiritually oriented and they want to serve the world and do good, will often, though, end up sabotaging themselves by perhaps picking a market that they really want to serve, but then trying to sell products and services to a market that has no money to pay for them. And that can be a recipe for disaster as well.
Yeah, yeah, that is one of my questions.
Well, we can go into that. We can go into that more then.
Yeah, but I think you're speaking to something that's really key here, because one of the areas that I see that people have a lot of, so you've got this thing that's you know, that's driving you from inside. You know that you want to do something, and you've got an idea of what the business is. For people that are starting out, how does that translate? Like, you've got something in your heart that wants to be a service that you want to provide.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the first things, like baby steps that you can take when you're first starting out to figure out what is it that I can do? What kind of a business can I do? What are some of the things that people can explore as they're initially getting these inklings that they want to start a business?
Well, let's have people draw. You remember those Venn diagrams in eighth grade algebra that used to drive us all crazy?
Mm-hmm.
Intersecting circles. Well,
mm-hmm.
I think this diagram might be helpful. Let's draw a circle, first of all, and put passion in there. Just write the word passion. And then another circle, maybe to the right of it, just to the right of it, so that it overlaps and intersects a little bit. And we'll put that expertise, okay? And then a circle below that so that it intersects the other two circles. And that would be, let's see, what kind of term can I use for it? Just put market under there, okay? Now you see there's a spot in the middle there where all three of those intersect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you've drawn it correctly. And you can color that in. And so that's what people should do. They'd explore what we call our three circles. This is something that I do extensively with my platinum level clients. But the passion is, what are you passionate about in your life? And that's where most people start out. They just get drawn to this kind of area. Maybe it's healing. Maybe it's some aspect of spirituality. Maybe it's some aspect of wellness, you know, those things. And so what is it that you're passionate about? For most people, that's relatively easy to identify. Then the next, and you shouldn't censor yourself. A lot of people are passionate about more than one thing. So, you know, go crazy, make a list, you know. And then you jump over to the next circle, and that is your area of expertise. Okay, now you may not be a card-carrying, book-toting degree member of a certain area, like a lawyer or a doctor or whatever, but you, by virtue of having lived and having been exposed to things, probably have more expertise than you know in various areas. Perhaps you have a hobby that you're really interested in. Maybe you're an expert bird watcher. You know, maybe you grow world-class tomatoes. I don't know. But you're probably an expert at more than one thing. Then you want to list all those. Then the crucial thing is, okay, fine. Then you go down and you look and you see go back a step and look at where those intersect. Do any of those areas that you are an expert in or have expertise in intersect with what you're passionate about? Because that's very, very helpful. Then you want to go down and see if there's a market there. Are there people who are interested in what you have to offer? And secondly, do they have the means to purchase? Okay, there may be people out there who want what you have, but they may not have any money. So let's just take an example. Let's go back to the bird watching example, for instance. Let's say you've been an avid bird watcher since you were a teenager. You participate in all the Audubon Christmas bird counts. You have a really high-powered pair of binoculars. You've led some amateur bird walks. You're pretty good at identification, et cetera, et cetera. You buy all the new birding books that come out, and you're passionate about it. And obviously, you have some expertise. So one way to determine if there might be a market for that would be to go to Barnes & Noble, where else, and peruse the magazine rack. Are there any magazines there that are specifically related to bird watching? And if you go to Barnes & Noble, you will see that there are probably more than one. or go to Amazon.com. You can look at magazines there if you can't get out to a bookstore. And also look at all the books that have been written about that kind of thing. Is there a dummies guide for what you're interested in? Chances are that that's a niche that people are making money on. Otherwise, the Dummies Corporation would not, they're no dummies, would have would not have invested research in putting out a book about it. So look at those three circles: passion, your expertise, and is there a market? And that's a first thing. A lot of people flounder around for years before they get enough direction from a good coach to take them to do just that. So,
that was a priceless exercise right there, folks. That's a wonderful model.
Sometimes it's hard to do it by yourself.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can't see. You know, you think, oh, you tend to discount stuff. You know.
Yeah.
So. But this can be done alone, and you know, if you can't figure it out, ask somebody else what they think you're an expert in. You'd be surprised.
Yeah, and it's a good starting point, because a lot of times I was speaking to someone a little bit earlier today who had a lot of ideas. She was on a call with me earlier, and she purchased one of the upgrades for the program, and that can happen sometimes when you've got so many ideas. You can actually kind of shortchange yourself from starting anything, and it can actually stop you from taking any action. So an exercise like this can give you a starting point for you to explore. And as you explore, you know, what your business is and what it becomes gets more and more refined and defined as you step into it. So So this is kind of a related question, and I know that you've got like some cool info around, you know, the heart that I know that you were going to share with us. So yeah, maybe we can talk about that first. But before we do that, one of the things that I noticed that this whole adventure of having a business is that as you launch a business, one of the things that happens is that you're challenged to become a different kind of person than who you originally start off as, right?
That is so true. And that's not something you understand usually at the beginning. And you can hear people say it, and you think, well, yeah. It's just like telling somebody what it's like to be a parent, and they think, oh, yeah, I know that. And then when you get a kid, you think, oh, man, I didn't know anything, you know? So it's the same way when you start a business. It's people tell you that it's going to change you, but you do not understand. But just be prepared for a ride. And it's good. It's going to stretch you. It's going to grow you beyond your wildest imagination.
Yeah, it's like if you ever wanted a great personal development course, start a business. Launch yourself on a business. And so I wondered if you could speak to what some of those challenges are that come up, especially as you look to implement your authentic business. What are some of the things that come up that kind of people get stuck on?
Well, I think one of the first things that comes up for most people is fear. And they have all kinds of things that they don't, but it's because it's the great unknown. You know, there's so much to figure out. Do I have to get a business license? What kind of, you know, should I incorporate? How am I going to get a website up? I'm a techno nerd. You know, I don't know anything. So just lots and lots of fears. Can you still hear me, Adela?
I hear
my phone clicking. So if there's a problem, I'll have to call back in. But basically, most people have to face a lot of fears. The other big thing that comes up is people think they... Uh-oh. Adela, have I still got you?
Yeah, you're still here.
Okay, I feel like I'm cutting in and out. There's a lot of clicking on my line. So I'll just leave it up to you to tell me if you can't.
Yeah, I'll tell you if it's a problem.
Okay, sorry about that. The other thing besides fear that comes up for people is that they're not good enough. Who am I to start a business? Because most of us, when we were children or in our formative years, we came under the influence of probably well-meaning parents, teachers, spiritual leaders, other authority figures. And we got some fairly negative things, all of us. Ingrained in our heads about who we are supposed to be and how we're supposed to show up in the world. So a lot of us have a lot of fear and say to ourselves things like, you know, I can never do that. Fortunately, those kinds of fears and those kinds of things about not being good enough can be overcome. But it takes work to do that. So those are the two of the biggest problems that I see. Now, you notice I didn't say the first thing was I don't have enough money to start a business. There's money, you know, just like for everything, for your customers too, money is not the first concern. It's usually our internal, or as you term it, Adela, your inner game that gets in your way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are the two biggies. I'd have to agree with you.
Yeah. There are probably others, but those are the two big ones that come up
for
me.
The two biggies. And the good thing about those two biggies is that, as we were speaking just a moment before, is your relationship to those changes as you're in business.
Yeah, they really do. You tend to start to look at fear as your friend a little bit. Now, I'm not talking about the kind of fear that comes if you're about to drive over a cliff. Okay, you need to stop and back away from that. But I'm talking about, because that kind of fear is protective, that kind of physical fear if somebody came into the room with a gun or something, God forbid. So I'm not talking about that kind of fear. I'm talking about that butterflies in the stomach clutching sort of paralysis, fearful to take action kind of fear. Okay, and I kind of lost my train of thought there as to where I was going with that. What was the question again?
Well, it's that our relationship to it changes.
Oh, big time.
And that fear is your friend.
Fear actually becomes your friend, because as you start to set goals and you start to take on projects, I know now that if I don't feel a little bit scared, like, whoa, that's big, my goal is not big enough. It's too small, and I've learned that over time. So in that respect, if I don't feel a little bit fearful when I undertake something, I know that it's not big enough. Now, I don't know. Do you know Ben Dean? He's the CEO of Mentor Coach Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fairly well-known coaching school. He has a great saying that he used to say all the time to us. I took a coaching class through his company many years ago, and he said, when you hear the sound of the cannons, walk toward them, not away from them. Walk toward the sound of the cannons. So you hear, you know, the distant battle in there. You don't run away. Walk toward it. So you have to approach it what you think is scary. But it's tough to do sometimes.
So how I know that one of the habits, one of the things, as we're talking about this inner game, one of the things that really, really keeps us stuck from actually stepping into as big a vision of our business or even getting started with it is this whole thing of being in our head,
right,
you know, and of only using our intellect as the only way of measuring and relating to how we're doing in our business. And
well, that's been played up, hasn't it?
That's
like the only way, the only legitimate way until recently. Sorry, I didn't mean to run over what you were going to say.
No, you're going right with me. But that's what's so exciting about right now. And there's so many people speaking about it. There's so many books that are coming out around this topic now that, you know, the intellect is not the only spot. As a matter of fact, people who are highly successful, people who are really doing extraordinary, who really big, you know, people like Richard Branson and, you know, Bill Gates, all of these guys, a lot of their ideas do not come from the intellect.
Right, right. Well, if you look back over the history of scientific achievement in particular, there are a lot of examples of things that happened really outside the normal, what we would call intellectual stuff. There was a Barbara McClintock, the late Barbara McClintock. She was a Nobel Prize-winning geneticist who did a lot of work with, I believe she worked on corn, actually. And she used to say that in her work, she could actually get within the organism somehow. And yet she came out with rigorous scientific papers and won a Nobel Prize. And she's not the only example of that. There are many, many famous scientists who got their best ideas and their best breakthroughs while they were dreaming and in other ways. So, but this is only now, those were kind of isolated incidents, but those are only now, is beginning to be talked about more openly.
Yeah. So how does the heart actually help us in our business?
Well, this whole area of heart intelligence is really quite fascinating. Now, hopefully, I think I offered your folks a bonus, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
When they signed up, and I hope that everybody picked that up because that was.
Well, they haven't. They haven't. I'm sending out the bonus page this weekend.
Oh, okay.
We'll get it all this weekend.
Sorry,
yeah.
I got ahead of myself. But you'll be getting a bonus from me, which is about an hour long recording of a conversation I had with some colleagues about this aspect of heart intelligence. Because of course we're not going to have time to go into everything today. So I hope you pick that up and listen to it. But this idea of heart intelligence has actually been around for quite a number of years. Scientists have discovered that there is a collection of neurons, and by neurons I mean nerve cells, just like you have in the brain, that are actually in the heart. And they work together kind of as a mini brain. They not only affect the heart, they also affect our brain, the brain and the head, not the brain and the heart. By sometimes, you know, when we take in sick bodily signals, you know, through our eyes, through our skin, temperature changes, et cetera, many of those signals will bypass the brain and go directly to the heart first, where they are kind of mediated, and then the signals go up to the brain. So whether you like it or not, your heart is affecting your thoughts. Now, if you have a heart that is constantly stressed out and chaotic, then the quality of those thoughts will not be as clean as if you had a heart that was more calm. Now, in some respects, we can, you know, we've all been taught to, you know, take care of our hearts by exercising and eating correctly, and now there's a lot of evidence, in particularly for women, that sleep is extremely important for heart health. So, you know, now you have another reason to take care of yourself physically, because you don't want to just say, well, you know, I don't want to have a heart attack, and that's a good enough reason. But if you think about it, Adele, if you think that your heart is directly responsible for some of the quality of your thoughts, that's a huge reason to take care of yourself. Now, there are other ways to take care of yourself. Oh, and another physical thing that's really coming to the forefront lately are low levels of vitamin D, which are rampant, and that's really being hyped up now as a cause of heart disease. And also fish oil, you know, fish oil supplementation can help as well. Those are the physical things. But there are certain mental things that one can do that will directly affect the heart. There's something called heart rate variability. And, you know, we've all been taught that to have an irregular heart rhythm is not a good thing, right? You want your heartbeat to be regular. You go to the doctor, or the nurse takes your pulse, you know. They say, oh, it's nice and regular, you know. You don't want to be seen as having an irregular heartbeat, because that can be a sign of heart disease. But there's something called heart rate variability. And that does not mean an irregular heart rhythm. It just means that from beat to beat to beat, there is a slight variation. And it turns out that the more variation there is there, the healthier your heart is. Now, that cannot be seen on a regular electrocardiogram at all. It's not. It's a microscopic kind of measurement, and it doesn't. You couldn't tell it by feeling of your pulse. But there are various biofeedback instruments that you can use to actually improve or increase your heart rate variability. This is called increasing your cardiac coherence. And it really is really fairly simple to do. Do you want me to kind of lead people through that?
Oh, I would love it. Yeah, I was just going to
ask you. Okay, it's really, really simple. We don't have to go into any kind of real, you know, hypnotic kind of trance to do that or anything. It's very simple. So basically, all you have to do is bring your attention to the area around your heart. Now, everybody can do that. Now, if you can't do that, and some people have difficulty, you can just take the flat of your hand, your palm, and place it over your breastbone, okay? Maybe a little bit slightly to the left. People would be surprised. Your heart is not over to the left as much as you might think. It's more in the center of your chest, so a little bit to the left. So place your hand there, and you can feel that warmth. Most of you will be able to feel a warmth there. Can you appreciate that, Adela?
Mm-hmm.
That warmth from your palm kind of penetrating your breastbone there. So just bring your attention then to your area around the heart. And then just begin to breathe regularly and evenly in and out through your nose if you can, okay? Some people have difficulty with that. It's okay if you have to breathe through your mouth, but preferably through your nose, in and out, regularly, in and out. And then as you breathe, just pretend in your mind's eye that you're breathing in and out through your heart, okay? Whatever that means for you, just pretend. Just, you know, play with me here. And let's just breathe in and out through our heart area. And as you're breathing in and out through your heart, bring to mind a time when you felt a sense of appreciation or gratitude. Perhaps it was holding a newborn in your arms. Perhaps it's your dog that greets you with a wagging tail at your door every day. Whatever it is for you, a smile on a favorite friend's face, just feel a sense of gratitude. Whatever that might be. Now just continue to just kind of soak in that feeling of gratitude there for a moment. Continue to breathe in and out through your heart. And then bring your attention back to your breath as it's flowing in and out of your nose. You usually sense a feeling of a little bit of coolness as you breathe in and warmth as you breathe out. And then just come back to the present moment. Now, we only did that for a few seconds, but that technique actually was pioneered. I want to give credit. That is not my original technique. That was pioneered by Howard Martin and Dr. Childre at the HeartMath Corporation. And I use that frequently. That will, if you had a biofeedback monitor on you that measured heart rate variability, chances are you would have seen your heart rate variability increase when you did that exercise. And the more you do it, the better at it you'll get. Now, in the middle of that exercise, while you're feeling that feeling of gratitude, if you have a question about your business or you have a decision you're trying to make, ask your heart for the answer. And then just sit there and breathe and just see what pops into your head. It might be an image. It might be a word. If you want to, you can jot that down. And a lot of times you'll get an answer to something there that would not have come through using your intellect by trying to think about it. You know, you just tend to go round and round and round. So hopefully that'll be helpful to some folks on the call.
I am so relaxed right now. Thank you.
Wake up, Adela.
Yeah, I'm just like, whoa, she sent me in a state. Oh, wow, that was great. Ah. What's so wonderful is you don't even need a lot of words. It's just, you know, slight suggestion.
No, right,
We get it.
Yeah, and if you're doing it for yourself, really, you know, all you got to do is basically attention to your breathing in and out through your nose. Then drop that attention down to your heart area. Breathe in and out through your heart. Bring up the feeling of gratitude. And if you don't have a particular question or anything like that, just sit there with that feeling of gratitude and just regular breathing for a while. And then, you know, back to your breathing and then back to the present moment. If you have a question or problem, then, of course, you can ask it there.
Yeah. So not only is that just great for your mind and clearing and just getting you in your body, but it's got to be like your body must just so enjoy the attention of just the breath and the gratitude.
Oh, absolutely.
It,
the whole science of positive psychology now, the feelings of gratitude and appreciation have direct effects on our immune systems and not only on our cardiovascular health. There's something called the Mother Teresa effect. Have you heard about that?
No, I haven't.
It was a really fascinating study, Adela, where they had two groups of, I believe they were like undergraduates, you know, for psychologists, their ready market for experiments is undergraduate students, right? So they divided them up into two groups, and one they showed, a movie of something, and then the next group, they showed them a movie of Mother Teresa ministering to I believe it was a group of lepers, people who were suffering from leprosy in Calcutta. And then they collected samples of their saliva afterward, and the people who had watched the movie of Mother Teresa had a huge spike in a substance called immunoglobulin A, which is a marker of our immune systems. So it's been proven more than once now that feelings of gratitude and appreciation and even seeing others perform acts of kindness can affect our immune systems.
So how do you think that relates to when your business is purpose-driven in terms of its ability to thrive?
Well, you know, I think this idea of a heart-centered business, you can look at it in two ways. Now, some people will have a kind of business like this simply because of what they do. Like your business, for instance, Adela, is primarily heart-centered, right, because of what you do,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, you could choose to also sponsor a charity or do some good work with your profits, okay? That's a second level. And some people do both. Some people do only one. Other people have much more traditional-looking businesses, like bicycle repair shop or something. But they take a lot of their profits, and they do good with it. So there's kind of, see what I'm saying? There's like
mm-hmm.
two ways to do it. And if you can combine both of those ways, then you get, you know, double the whammy, right?
Yeah. Well, I want to take some questions because we've got a whole bunch of questions here, Ellen.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah,
I love questions.
I know you do. And I think you may have already started to answer this, but I did want to read her question. Drishana from Ireland. Where do you start when you truly are a beginner at business, have no funds to invest, one client who raves about you, and your warm heart, intuition, and abilities?
Did you say one client?
Yeah.
Raves about. So obviously this person has clients or has clients. I don't know what kind of business she has, but it sounds like she's just starting out. So what's her name again?
Her name is Drishana.
Drishana?
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly. I have a soft spot in my heart for Ireland. I've never been there, but love to go. Some of my ancestors came from there, so I get all warm inside when I hear Ireland. Anyway, I think, you know, if she's got a client that's raving about her, then you need to start with where you are and leverage that client. Talk to that client. Ask them about the value they got from what you did. Get a testimonial from that client. See if you can get a referral to get more business. And then if you absolutely have no money, then there are a lot of free resources out there. There are a lot of these free business telesummits out there. You know, I learned an awful lot from just attending free events. If you sign up for internet marketing stuff, you'll get more than you need in terms of free events. Now, granted, you can only go so far on free. But if you're a smart cookie and you've got brain cells to put together, you can figure out a lot for free. It'll take you a lot longer if you can't afford to hire somebody that's been there before, but it can be done. So I guess that's
yeah.
I know you probably have some advice too, Adela, I would think.
Well, for me, I would just focus on what's working and getting myself out there. Like you said, I would be doing more of it.
Yes.
Because one of the things that I notice for myself, and I do a good number of things that are free, is that so long as I'm in movement around my work and I'm doing it and I'm being it, opportunities keep coming my way for fee. You know, and I know that there's a lot of controversial opinions about this. I've had speakers on my telesummits that say you should never do anything for free. But I combine a model that is fee and free, and it's been working like hotcakes for me.
Yeah,
so,
I agree with that, Adela.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the most important thing is to be your work, to get out there and just be it, do it, find the opportunities, you know, whether it's, you know, a fair where you get to, because I don't know exactly, Drishana, what it is that you do. If I did, I might have some more suggestions. And if you'd like to, you know, email me, I'm happy to throw some things your way, Adela@AdelaRubio.com, or I can write about them up on the blog, because depending on what your business is, there's loads of ways that you can get exposure for yourself and get yourself out there. But the most important thing is just to be in it and to be doing your work. That's the most important thing.
Another thought for her, Adela, would be to get on Twitter and Facebook, because those are free.
Absolutely.
Get a social media following. That doesn't cost you anything except your internet connection.
Absolutely. And the other thing that I've been finding that's extraordinary is community. Letting other people know what it is that you do, because then when people know what you do and you're connected with them and you have a relationship, they will refer you. Or they'll tell, if somebody has use of your services, they'll let their friends know. So that's the other thing, relationship marketing. I'm very big on that one.
and I'm sure that this will resonate with a lot of folks who are on this call, too. So thank you for asking that question.
Yeah. Drishana actually had another question, too. What about the gut instinct, the voice that says, uh-huh, or uh-uh? It could be louder than head or heart.
I'm not – can you clarify what you think that means, Adela?
I think that she's talking about, you know, like when – what I call the yes or the no in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess she's trying to, you know, I guess she's – it feels like she's confused between that message, the message in her head, and the message in her heart,
mm-hmm.
thinking that they're different messages. I don't think they're different messages personally.
Yeah, I think if you'll use this technique that we just went through, if you're feeling ambivalent about, you know, well, maybe yes and maybe no, or you're feeling like one side is overriding the other, sit down and actually go through this process for a longer period of time, and that'll help you get a lot of clarity about what you're really feeling, what bubbles up from your heart. That's the truth when that comes out.
Yeah. Great. We've got another question from Josanne in Finland. And I'm not sure, the first part of her question, I'm not really sure that we even talked about this, but I'll read it. Isn't this a very masculine view on business with battle and fear? I don't remember that we talked about that.
Well, I brought up that fear, you know, the two things that come up for most people were fear and not being good enough. Maybe that's what she's referring to.
Maybe that's
what
she means. Huh? Okay. Isn't there a more feminine or relaxed or fun way to do business? And how can I have a clear heart when I am supposed to always search for scary situations and battles? Yeah, that's a little
confusing.
Well,
I think we're embodying that feminine way of doing business right now on this call. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And,
we're definitely embodying the more feminine, absolutely, I think.
Yeah. It's the more more connected, collaborative, not competitive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you still got to make a profit in your business, and you're going to have to do some things that are scary, but you're going to approach them in a way that doesn't see them as battles or war or, you know, destroying the competition kind of thing. You know, it doesn't have to be that way. Now, some women still play that game. We found that out, haven't we, Adela?
Oh, you yeah.
Know? They still play that game. They're still living in that kind of, well, in my, because of my marketing chi, that more yang male energy. And in reality, you have to have a balance of those things. So, you know, if you're a woman, you're going to naturally, more than likely, gravitate toward that more feminine way of doing business. And there are plenty of people out there that want to play with you that way. But there are a lot of people that don't. And, you know, you just have to go around or under those folks and try not to get into direct confrontational battles with them.
Okay. So someone just wrote in that she thought that she might have meant the canon analogy.
maybe. That's maybe. Well, what I was just meaning to get at there is that we will all come up with situations that are scary. When we have to, like for instance, when my students go out to do their first telesummit, they are scared to death.
Oh, my God.
But
terrified.
They're terrified. But they have to face their fears and walk toward the cannon. So that's what I meant by walking toward the sounds of the cannon, not run away from it. Because most people that I've dragged kicking and screaming to do a telesummit have just been the best thing in their life after the fact.
Yeah.
You know, we all know how it is when you do something new. You're scared. You're scared you're going to fail. You're scared you're going to look bad. You know, people are going to laugh at you, blah, whatever your voice in your head is blah, blah, blahing about at that moment, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's also something here in with the feminine way that there has to be a balance, because this is something you spoke about this a little bit earlier, and I was going to ask you a question about this. There's one more question, but I want to ask you this question
first.
You know, like, how do you and balance, I don't know if that's the right word, but how do you balance the purpose and the profits? Because this is one of those areas that, you know, you just give. I was on a call earlier where one of the folks was talking about how, you know, like, she always gives, and mm-hmm. nothing is coming back in return.
Well, that's not working then, is it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can't give everything away. You just can't, because the purpose of a business, like it or not, is to make a profit. And if you do not, I mean, that's the primary purpose, because if you don't make a profit, you have nothing to reinvest in your business, and you have no groceries to buy either, because you don't have any money. And if you cannot sustain yourself and you cannot sustain your business, then you're out of business, you have to go work for somebody else, and you're not serving people anymore. So people have to get that at the heart level, too, that there is nothing wrong with making a profit. It's what you do with it and how you serve your customers and clients. There's nothing wrong with asking people to pay for something that's a fair exchange of value. Nothing wrong with that. Now, a lot of people, some men included, but a lot of women have a lot of difficulty with this. And they give that, you know, I've had some people build an email list, and they can't bear to sell anything. And they give and they give and they give. And 6 months later, they decide, well, maybe I'm going to create this product. I'm going to try to sell it. They spend months creating a product, and they've given all this free stuff. Well, they send out an email asking people to buy, and they get hate mail from their list. They say, well, their list says, well, what do you mean? You've given all this stuff now. You want us to buy something? You have to train your list from the get-go that you're going to offer them products and services. And those products and services, of course, are going to be the very best that you can do and deliver the very best value for your prospects and customers. There's nothing wrong with that at all. There's no shame in that. You should be proud of that.
Yeah, that's a very important shift to make, especially for, you know, women, you know, just traditionally, just, you know, in our own lives, we're just used to being, you know, nurturers, and we're used to giving. And so then we come into a business, and so, you know, there's an exchange that is required in order for your business to be viable. And it's very important, because then with your business, you can create all kinds of things that can benefit other people. You can, you know, support organizations and causes that you feel really strongly about. But you can't do that if you don't have a business. And a business really is also about your service to the world. And so the exchange is important in order for you to continue to be of service.
Absolutely. You have to see your business as a profit-making center, because you're going to use that profit to sustain your business, sustain yourself, and do good in the world. I mean, even Mother Teresa, who we've talked about already, as poor personally as she was, had the wealth of the Catholic Church behind her. She didn't have to worry about where she's going to get her next meal. She could do her work because she was supported. So,
yeah.
You know.
We've got it. Questions are coming in now, Ellen.
Uh-oh. I'm going to cord.
I love it. Yeah. This is Jane from Brisbane in Australia. Hi, Ellen. How do you find if there is a market and if the people have the means to purchase? Any tips? Thank you.
Well, like I said, look and see if other people are already selling what you want to do, okay? Now, people will say, oh, I have this unique idea. Nah. Look, hang it up. There are no unique ideas except for Apple, all right? So if you cannot go out and create your product before you know there is a market. I've been there, done that. Don't do it. Look and see if other people are already selling what you want to do. If there's a market out there, there is room for you. So, you know, go and type your idea, your thing into Google. Look on the right-hand side of the page and see if there are a bunch of AdWords. Those are those little ads on the right-hand side of the page, you know, when you search on Google for something.
Mm-hmm.
If there's lots of those out there, then the people are paying money for that, because those people are paying to advertise. Look and see if there are books and magazines written about your topic. If there are, chances are there's a big enough market out there to sustain you getting into it as well.
Yeah, great. I mean, Google is like every business person's best partner, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I mean, I Google everything.
That's right.
I don't know where I'd be without Google.
Well, you know, they've made Google now a verb now.
I know.
We all say, just Google it. Even my 87-year-old, even my 87-year-old mom says, just Google it, you know.
Yeah, but there's an important piece here that you're pointing to. You know, you've got this passion. You've got this thing that you really love, that you want to create a business around, or you may have started it already, and maybe it's not going the way that you'd like it to go yet.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's going to really help you, of course, if you're already in it, you're actually testing it. So you're out there. You're out there in the wild, and you're testing it out. But one of the best things that you can do is do the footwork and research. Ellen's very big on research.
Very big.
Yeah. Are there any other things that you can think of to share with people in terms of the research to figure out the viability of their business and if their idea is a good one?
Well, you know, just the internet is so convenient. So, you know, Google AdWords, looking at the books on Amazon in your topic, is there a dummy's guide? Is there an idiot's guide? Going to the bookstore, looking at magazines in your niche area to see if there's at least one or two magazines, because if magazines wouldn't be publishing if there's not enough people in that particular niche to buy. And you also can pick up those magazines and look at the classifieds in the back of them.
Mm-hmm.
Follow those classifieds. If you can get 2 or 3 months issues, and look at the classifieds that are continuously running over and over, because you know those are making money. Otherwise, they wouldn't run them anymore. Okay?
Yeah.
So those are the kinds of things that I would do. You can also join forums in your particular area. Those are a great source of information. If you join if you just Google whatever your niche is, like if it was bird watching forums, go and join and listen in on the conversations that are going on there about what problems people are having and what they're buying and that kind of thing. That can give you a wealth of information.
Great. Wonderful. Okay, we've got, there's another question here. This is also from Jane in Brisbane. I've been running my business for a couple of months. It's in recruitment in a niche market where I have a very good reputation. However, it hasn't been making much money, not yet, and I have these moments of a huge fear as I'm running out of funds. Is that fear telling me to get out, or is it just a normal feeling that you have when you start a business?
Ooh, yikes. Well, it could be. You know, if you're skilled at what you do and you know your market, it could be a sign that, and I don't know what your business is. What did she say, recruitment?
In a niche market.
Recruitment in a niche market. See, I don't know what that means. So you or someone that's knowledgeable and that you trust need to analyze your market to see if indeed it's viable, because you don't want to run out of money and run yourself into ground if you can see already that this is not a viable niche. So you need to speak with someone that you can trust that can analyze your niche for you and look at your market and say whether it's worth forging ahead or not. And that, I'm sorry I can't be more specific than that, but I don't know what it is. So.
Yeah, there's not a lot of information there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks. One last question. People are really tapping into your expertise here, Ellen. This is Linda from Nashville. What's the best source online to learn how to approach JV partners?
The best source online to learn?
I don't know any online.
I have to laugh at that, Adela. That would be me. I'm sorry. They're really, I don't know of any. I really don't know of any.
Yeah, there's an art and a science to this.
There's an art and a science. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And if you want to learn that, Ellen is the woman. No doubt about that. Yeah. But it is, you know, JV partners are a way to grow your business, but you have to have a business, don't you, Ellen?
Yeah, you really, you can't. Now, granted, though, Adela, if you've got a really bang-up product and you know that it can sell, you know, sell. But see, if you know it's selling, you already have a business. Most JV partners, even if you have a product, are not going to just come and take your product and advertise it to their list. They want to know that it sells and that you've got some, you know, some experience behind it. Because I have people call me all the time saying, I have this great product and I want you to promote it to your list. But they have no business and no track record. So I'm very reluctant to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So my advice would be to start to grow your opt-in list, and with that growth of your opt-in list will come some leverage. Start to attend some conferences in your niche area and meet people face-to-face. That is just the best thing to do. If you can meet people face-to-face and you can talk to them in person, that's the very best way to get a JV partner, absolutely the very best.
Yeah, and it's also a great way to find out what other people are doing and what kind of businesses there are out there.
Absolutely.
You know, like especially if you're trying to figure out, okay, what do I do? You know, when you go to these conferences, basically people love to talk about what they're up to.
That's right. You can pump them for information.
Yeah,
oh, tell me
just,
more about what you're up
yeah,
to. Tell
you
me more
just,
about your new projects, you know. And
you
they'll blah, 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 blah. And you can get lots of information that way.
And not to say that, you know, you're going to go around and copy people.
Oh, no, no. I'm not.
Yeah, but the thing is that once you see how what a variety of different kind of businesses and how people have their businesses set up, that really does amazing things for your own ability to come up with something for yourself.
Right, and you don't want to try to copy people. That's not what Adela's saying.
Yeah.
What we're saying is you want to model people. You want to look at their business model, and you want to take your stuff and your way of approaching things. Because, let's face it, even if we try, we can't copy anybody. Did you see the new movie with Meryl Streep, Adela?
I love that.
Well, did you watch the extra stuff on the disc about how the how this movie came about and stuff?
No.
And that it's
no.
really not. She's really Meryl Streep's talking. She's really not trying to do an impression or caricature of Julia Child.
Uh-huh.
She's just doing a kind of her essence, her way of interpreting Julia Child. So she's not a copycat of Julia. I thought it was a very insightful commentary, and it really applies here because Meryl Streep cannot be Julia Child, no matter how good an actress she is. But she certainly got the model down. So,
yes,
you know, you want to really look at people. You want to model people who are successful, but don't try to be them. It doesn't work.
Yeah, we've got one final question before you tell us about your guided imagery.
Oh, my goodies. Okay. Yeah.
Goodies.
Goodies. That's what Andy Weibel calls everything.
Goodies, I know. So there's this last question. How do I know in business whom I can trust?
Well, you can do tried and true experience. It's tough. Look at who's been out there and look at who's been out there for a while. Okay. See that they have a track record, because if they're a charlatan, they'll go away after a while. See if there are people who that they've got testimonials from people that you recognize, other people that you recognize that are reputable in the industry, and ask people who you trust for recommendations. Anything else that you would add to that, Adela?
You know, for me, if I meet someone in person, I get a really good feel for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that direct conversation is one of the best ways that you can come to know someone. So a lot of what I do is I have phone calls with people. I'll call people up and get to know them.
Excellent.
And then I have some guidelines. So you didn't say, I have some guidelines. So if it's in business, I have some guidelines for how I play. And then, you know, I talk to the person about, you know, my model or how I think we can play together or whatever it is that I'm talking to them about. And I can tell in a conversation if someone is playing in the same field as I am.
Yeah, there's nothing that substitutes for that personal conversation.
Yeah.
I agree with that, Adela, 100%.
Yeah, it's that's the way to go. You know, I know that can be scary, too, because you're like, well, who's going to want to talk to me? I know all about that. 2 years ago, before I did my first telesummit, I was like, Ellen.
You'd be surprised. You just pick up the phone. Yeah.
It's so hysterical. I was just do it. but you'd be surprised. Exactly. There's some people that will say no and won't want to talk to you, you know? You know, unless you've got a list this size or unless you've written a book or whatever. And that just means those aren't the people for you to play with right now.
And if you're gonna think about hiring somebody to coach you, you definitely want to have a phone conversation with them. Absolutely. If they just want you to send in an application and send your money in, run away. You want to talk with those folks on the phone. Absolutely.
Yeah.
People, you don't want to go through an assistant or anything else. You want to speak with them.
Yeah, you want direct contact, I would say, because I think folks that are in conscious business, the kind of folks that are on this line, you know, you're about communication, you're about connection, and having intermediaries. As a matter of fact, having intermediaries, just for me, doesn't work, even when I'm doing telesummits now. The initial contact may be the intermediary, but I want to speak to who I'm going to be interviewing.
Right.
Because
yeah, you can get surprised sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. You want to know who you want to have a conversation, you want to have a connection, and I think that's you need a connection. You need a connection in business. And you can't have trust if you don't have a connection. So, how do you have a connection? You get to know the person, you check out their website, you read their newsletters, you listen to them when they're showing up in telesummits or when they're doing teleclasses. You see, you Google them. Google will tell you all kinds of stuff. You'll
That's
find
right.
out all kinds of information about people.
Stuff that you didn't want to know.
Yeah, things you did, exactly. And then you would, this is all before you even talk to them, by the way.
Right. Now, granted, you have to take some stuff you find on Google, because you can have people, your list gets big enough, you can have people who are disgruntled with you no matter what.
Yeah.
So you have to make up your own mind. But if you see overwhelming negative evidence on the Internet, then, stay away from that person.
Yeah. Great recommendations. Thank you, Ellen. Can you tell us a little bit about the guided imagery CD?
Yeah, well, actually, we did a little bit of guided imagery today, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
A little heart-centered thing. And, I've had some formal training in guided imagery. I used to use guided imagery a lot in my work in the emergency room and in a pain management clinic. And I really got interested in it, and I put together a course several years ago. Because I have my own way of teaching it, called Guided Imagery Essentials, and I actually took a class through it. And this particular product, Guided Imagery Essentials, is that system. It's five hours of downloadable MP3 audios. They were recorded live from actual class sessions. So a lot of times, when you get a teleseminar product, they kind of shut the class off and cut them out of it. But with this particular one, because it was so interactive, I left it in because I found that people want to learn guided imagery for different reasons, and they tended to identify with one or more of the participants, so I left them in. So you can download those and put them on your iPod or your other MP3 player. It also includes a Guided Imagery Essentials guidebook. It's a downloadable PDF format to help you get through the materials. And also a pre-recorded live teleseminar or guided imagery Q&A session that has answers to many of your most pressing questions about getting started in guided imagery. The page that we put up for it, I think, Adela, you have there, and that's got actually some stuff that's written by a lot of the folks who came through the class. So go over there and check it out. I'm very proud of this product. And if you want to use guided imagery for yourself or for your friends or family, or if you want to even create your own product using guided imagery, we go into that as well. So I think you'll find it valuable, and I've made a special deal for you guys because you're coming directly from Adela's call.
Yeah, so
Adela,
you have
a link for them, right?
Yes, it's consciousbusinesstelesummit.com/guided imagery. So if you really want to understand how to use that guided imagery for yourself, for your clients, to create a product, this is a great product. Thank you so much.
Is guided imagery written all lowercase?
Yeah. It's all lowercase.
And I thought I saw on the webcast, too, the big button that you can just click and go over there. If you're on the webcast.
Yeah, that's really easy. You can just click on it.
Click the big button. It'll take you
And
right
it'll
over
take
there.
You over to the page. Yeah, wonderful. Ellen, thank you so much. It's always delightful to spend any time with you and to have
Adela,
you in
this
series.
Well, Adela, this has just been so much fun, and I just really appreciate all the questions that your audience. It's like you've got such a great crowd coming to your telesummit this time. It's just fantastic.
I know.
This
is the best crowd yet. I mean, we've got such an engaged crew of people that it is amazing. It's made a big difference in the telesummits and the questions that come through because, but they're really great questions, and they're speaking to what a lot of people are going through. So I really appreciate everyone being and engaging and interacting with us. So thank you. So I'm just going to unmute the lines, Ellen, so we can sign off. It's going to be noisy. All right. Thank you, everyone. Bye. Thanks.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
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 Thank you.
Bye.
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 Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you so much, Ellen.
Thanks, Ellen. That was great.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye.